Torch Trust, Sightloss 101, in conversation with Hazel Groves.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Sightloss 101. I'm Tim Jeffrey, and after many years working as a leader in the charity sector, I've recently started working for Torch Trust, a Christian charity for blind and partially sighted people. So here I am, a sighted person with very little personal experience of sight loss, leading a charity whose main purpose is focused entirely on people with visual impairment. So one of my first tasks has to be to develop a better appreciation of what it's like to be blind or to be living with sight loss. And what better way to do that than to have conversations with a variety of people with different experiences of visual impairment. Now, as all this is happening during lockdown, I can't actually get out to meet people face to face, so I'm having to do it remotely. And I suspect that I'm not the only one who wants to learn more about what life is like with a visual impairment. So we thought it would be a good idea to record these conversations and put them out as a podcast series. I hope you enjoy it. So today I have the joy of speaking with Hazel Groves. Hazel, it's lovely to have you with us. I wonder if you could tell me, when did your first realization of sight loss begin? I understand that you had had sight loss right from a baby.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Tim. So sight loss is almost the norm in our family. So I had childhood congenital cataracts. So most people assume that cataracts only affect people of a more mature age, shall we say?
Yeah.
But in our family, due to a genetic condition, we have them as babies. So I've never known a time when I've not had my vision impacted. So I was a baby. I don't remember this part. So I was very shortly after I was born, my vision was completely obscured by the cataracts. If I'd not had surgery, which I had between sort of 9 and 12 months old, I would not be able to see at all, anything at all. So they removed the cataracts even in young children. And but that means because you've not been able to see during those first few months of your life when your brain is learning to see, it's a combination of your brain not knowing how to see properly, but also the damage caused to your eye as a result of the surgery. So it's a bit of a double whammy, really.
Yeah. So how then did that progress as you grew up? What was your experience through childhood and teenagehood?
So as a child, even from being 2-3 years old, I used to wear contact lenses. Because I had no natural lens in my eye, that was removed as part of the surgery. They don't do it that way now, but that's how they did it in those days. So I had either had milk bottle glasses or contact lenses. But even with those glasses or lenses, I still couldn't see more than 2 or 3 lines down the chart. When I was sort of 8-9 years old, I grew intolerant to the contact lens wear. I couldn't wear the contact lenses anymore. So then I had artificial lenses implanted with more surgery.
Okay.
It was quite uncommon at that time to have children. I was only 9 years old when I had that surgery. It was very unusual. Even now, there's some debate as to whether lens implants should be implanted in children because you're still growing.
Yeah.
And so I had those lenses then. Unfortunately for me, when I had one of those, they do the each eye separately. During one of those surgeries, I had a post-op infection and ended up losing quite a lot of vision. The eye that I could see 2 or 3 lines down the chart in, I then couldn't see any letters on the chart with that eye following that surgery, unfortunately, as a post-op complication. But after that, my vision was pretty stable, managed with, I was in a mainstream school up until 16, with additional support.
What sort of stuff was helpful to you?
So I was taught, I always say the best thing I ever learned at school was touch typing.
Yeah.
That was absolutely great. I was able to use that in my exams. And had large print material, a laptop, of course, and also one-to-one support, particularly for those practical lessons. Funnily enough, the fourth hour was a bit of a hazard with a saw or a soldering iron in DT. So my sight then remained stable up until about sort of 4 or 5 years ago, when one of those lens implants started to degrade. And was causing a lot of pain because it had dislocated. So they removed that and replaced it. And again, the problem is, Tim, the more surgery you have, you know, it's a very delicate organ, the eye. Yeah. The more surgery you have, the more chance of causing more damage. So I've got a lot of scarring that, you know, there's just nothing they can do at the moment to correct that. So over the last sort of 2 or 3 years, I have noticed a deterioration in my vision, and I am registered sort of severely sight impaired now. Right. But you just get on with it. It's I think because it's not been a sudden loss of sight. It's been the norm because I grew up with limited sight, and then as it has deteriorated over the last few years, it's been slow. So you just adapt and learn to do new things in each stage, really.
Yeah. So help me understand, what do you see now? I mean, you talk about the sort of levels on the chart, so I'm thinking about the opticians and the kind of big letters at the top.
Yeah.
What? How much do you see now? Help me, give me some idea of you know, if I was looking through your eyes, what I'd be experiencing?
So now I see the biggest letter on a good day. With my better eye, your vision can fluctuate during the day as well, particularly if you had a lot of screen time, as we all have lately. I'm looking at you on the tablet right now. but I always say, you're like this, Tim, I always say it's a blessing, actually, because everybody looks 25 because you can't see the wrinkles.
That's good. And so so now you're looking at a tablet, and
I mean, I can see that, you know, obviously the thing is as well, Tim, you know what things look like.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, so obviously you're a person. I know you're a person. I know what a person looks like. I can see, so looking at the screen now, I can see that there's a head because I know it's a head.
Yeah.
I can't see the colour of your eyes. I can't see whether you're wearing glasses or if you've got a beard. You're just a flesh coloured blob on a white shirt, so you know.
Thank you, that is really useful to know, actually, because the first podcast I did was with Mike Townsend, and I just had a little goatee beard, but a week later I've got a fuller beard at the moment because I haven't been shaved during lockdown, so you're spared that. So what are the sort of frustrations, challenges that your sight loss brings up for you?
Okay, so one of the difficulties, Tim, is actually the problem is that everybody who experiences sight loss experiences it differently with different levels.
Yeah.
And actually, for me personally, the biggest amount of discrimination I've faced actually in my life has been from other people who are visually impaired. As I said to you before, I went to a normal mainstream secondary school, and where I was the only visually impaired student in my year group. And don't get me wrong, Tim, that had its own challenges, you know. But I then went to the College for the Blind in Worcester, and then found myself as being one of the more sighted students.
Right.
And actually, there was it was almost, you know, you were a total or you weren't, and you were equally as excluded because actually you had a bit of usable sight. And then going further on, becoming a mum myself, I got involved with some groups for visually impaired parents. And again, there was quite a distinction between, you know, those of us who had a bit of usable sight and made the most of what we had, and the ladies who had little to no sight. Really, it was actually quite difficult, actually, and you'd think it wouldn't be, wouldn't you? You'd think we'd all be in the same boat, but actually that's actually been quite challenging.
That's really interesting to hear. Yeah, thank you for that. And Hazel, on the sort of the other side of that coin, are there particular gifts that you find that your sight loss has brought you, or things you can identify? You think, yeah, actually, that's been in some kind of way a positive about my condition.
Well, I have to say, Tim, that the big advantage is you never have to be the designated driver. but seriously, though, I think because you do experience a challenge in your life, you know, that actually I think it makes you more empathetic to people who are experiencing all kinds of different difficulties in their life. I worked for a while as a paralegal, and a lot of that work was I attended court hearings where a barrister was representing clients, quite often parents who were in care proceedings. So, you know, the most difficult situation for anybody to go through. And part of my job was to take the notes for the barrister, get their coffee, but also to be there to support those families who were going through that difficult time. And although I couldn't relate to it, their experiences on some levels, I felt that the difficulties that I'd faced in life, actually, I feel it makes me less judgmental and, you know, more willing to just, you know, you just had to, you just, it was part of the job was to support them, no matter whether you agreed with what they'd done or not.
Yeah, thank you. That is fascinating. Are there things that a sighted person like me, that you'd want me to be aware of in terms of the language I use or the way I act or anything? What sort of some of the things that sighted people do that you'd like to warn me off?
You know what, Tim? Use whatever language you like. I really don't care. I know some people get hung up about, you know, you're blind or did you watch EastEnders? I don't watch EastEnders at all, by the way. But you know, I'm really not bothered about any of that language stuff at all. But I think the thing that is probably the most difficult thing for sighted people to understand is, as I've kind of alluded to a bit already, that each person with sight loss will undoubtedly see and experience things differently. Mm-hmm. You know, just because I'm registered blind, you know, you've interviewed Mike. Mike's registered blind as well, but what I can see and what Mike can see are totally different things. Yeah. Just, you know, be prepared to ask the person how you can help them and not assume. I love that Bible passage when Jesus, you know, asks the blind man, "What can I do for you? What do you want me to do?" That empowering us to take, you know, to take the lead in and what we need, I think would be the biggest piece of advice I would give.
That is so helpful. Thank you, and beautifully put. You mentioned that Bible passage. I was going to ask you how, I know that, you know, you're a Christian, you have a strong faith. How have you reconciled your faith with your sight loss?
It's been a challenge, Tim. I will not, don't deny that for one bit. So I only came to faith in my 30s. My sister, who is also blind as well, she's a vicar, she's a Church of England minister, and found faith quite early on in her life. For me, I would say the Lord brought me in kicking and screaming.
How did he manage to do that? What happened?
So as a teenager for me, it was a really difficult time. As I said, being in the mainstream school and at a special school, and never really feeling like I belonged in either environment. And then I got married, was working, started to have children, you know, everything was okay. And I'd gone from thinking God just wasn't interested in my life, didn't care about the struggles I was facing, to God being remote and not really have any, you know, not really interested in me, and just didn't really think about it, to be honest. Then my youngest son was born, and Andrew has the same eye condition as me. So obviously that was quite traumatic. It was my turn to sit with him in the operating theatre while I put him to sleep for his his surgery that he needed. He was 16 weeks old when he had his first eye operation, and he had four before he was a year old. So, but, you know, I got through it. Still didn't think to turn to the Lord at that point. And then my oldest son, a few years later, was getting ready to start school. Okay, so we looked around all the local schools. I live in Kent now, but you might be able to tell from the accent, I've not always lived in Kent. and so I looked around the local schools, and it was a local Church of England school that really impressed us. The caring and the compassion. And when I was looking for school for my oldest son, I had in the back of my mind the fact that his brother would be starting school. And at that point, we didn't know how good Andrew's vision was going to be. So it was looking on the school that would support both my children going forward. And the headmistress was absolutely lovely. And it was a heavily oversubscribed school, but she got us in on the special circumstances criteria. So we got a place. And I was just so grateful and so thankful that, you know, that we'd got that. And so I thought it might be nice to take my son to Sunday school every now and then, because, you know, we'd been so blessed with having that school place. The local CV church is pretty much an elderly congregation, but I was going to a Friday toddler group at the church I now attend. It's an apostolic church in Dover. And one of the other mums there said, well, why don't you come here? Because at that point, the church had about 80 kids in their Sunday school from sort of 0 to 13. So quite a lot of children. So I did. And I started going to that church feeling quite apprehensive, I won't lie. But on the first, you'll like this, Tim. On the first day, okay, the first time I went to that church, the worship leader at the time, who I'm now really good friends with, he played Matt Redman's You Never Let Go, you know, the one based on Psalm 23. Yeah. And I thought, wow, that's a side of God I've never experienced before. And wanted to know more. And it took a good few months, but I gave my life to the Lord at that church and have been baptised there. And my oldest son was baptised just over a year ago at that church as well, and we're still there. So it's been definitely been a journey. Yeah. And, you know, there's still aspects of Scripture that I find difficult.
Yeah.
The Bible uses a lot of analogy about, you know, the eyes being the window to the soul and sight. And that has actually been quite a challenge for me. Personally, your head knows it's an analogy, Tim. You know, it's not specifically put down blind people, but, you know, sometimes it can feel that way if the person who's preaching it, you know, is not aware that maybe there could be blind people in the congregation. And I think that's one of the good things Torch does with the Sight Loss Friendly Church program, of, you know, explaining, just raising the awareness of churches about what's going on with their, potentially with their congregation, and how actually some of these messages can impact people.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And so what difference would you say being a Christian now has made to your life?
Oh, absolutely amazing. I feel, you know, honestly, Tim, I just think, why didn't I do this, you know, so many years before? I just feel so much more comfortable in who I am, and I'm really well supported by my church. In fact, the lead pastor, he's got me on the Churches Together committee now as their secretary, because that's what I do for a job for schools. So you know, I've never felt, you know, as if, apart from the odd sermon that might be a little bit raw, you know, otherwise I felt really supported and included.
Wow. Hazel, thank you. It has been such a pleasure to hear your story and some of your experiences. So thank you for making this time to talk with me. And I hope it doesn't just bless me, but it blesses lots of people who will listen to this. So thank you so much.
No problem at all. My pleasure, Tim.
God bless.
Thank you for joining us in Sight Loss 101. For more information on Torch, call 01858 438 260.